The Murder Mystery Podcast. The story unfolds each week. Will you guess the killer?
On the Murder Mystery Podcast, it's the London Connection. Episode 16. She can hear her phone ringing in the distance. For a second, as she wakes, there's no pain in her head. Then it pours into her consciousness like a waterfall. The ringing stops, and Olivia keeps her eyes shut. As well as head wounds, Olivia's whole body feels battered. She doesn't know what time it was when the man attacked her, nor how long she's been asleep. She tries to stand and stops, then sways as she gets used to being vertical. She finds her phone and flicks through the notifications. There are 4 calls from Gia in the office at half-hourly intervals, plus numerous other messages. She checks the time. It's 11:30. She calls Gia's number, which fortunately goes to voicemail. Olivia clears her throat and leaves a message to say she's unwell and has only just woken up. She'll be off today and back on Monday. Then she showers, clinging onto the tiled wall to steady herself. She cleans up her nose and the cut on her cheek in the bathroom mirror, then walks to the bedroom and goes back to bed. It's nearly 5 o'clock when Olivia wakes again. She feels distinctly better as she lays there, but her nose still hurts. She goes into the sitting room, picks up her belongings that were scattered by the intruder, and shoves them unceremoniously back into cupboards. She looks at her phone messages again. One from Poppy says she's calling in to see her after school today, which will be any time now. And Ellen has left a message asking if she's free and does she want to meet up. Olivia replies telling Ellen to come over, but later this evening. The sound of the front door banging announces her daughter's arrival. Poppy rolls in, dumps her backpack on a chair, and sits down opposite her mother.
You look like shit, Mum. Been in the wars?
A burglar last night.
Oh, God, you okay? Did he give you that black eye?
Olivia goes to the long mirror on the lounge wall to inspect the latest on her face.
Did you take anything?
I haven't checked, to be honest.
I've only got 30 minutes, Mum,
says Poppy.
I'm going for drinks with the girls, then seeing my new man.
Oh, yes.
How's that going?
Good. I'll make you tea.
When Poppy returns, she says,
How's the job going?
Still dull, but they pay well because I could do it at short notice.
Tell me about it.
I've always been interested in the Whitehall stuff,
says Poppy, to Olivia's surprise.
Who's involved? Anyone I've heard of? We did a politics stream in my A-level course at school. This woman called Heather Wells came in to talk to us a couple of months ago about being a woman in Westminster.
She's my boss, says Olivia.
She mentioned some woman who wants to be an MP. Greta Alpin?
Greer, says Olivia.
I've met her too. You know I was away last weekend. She was there. Do you know anything more about Greer Alpin?
Says Poppy.
Successful and rich.
But what's she like? Is she a mad control freak or nice to your face then bits you off when you've left the room?
Olivia laughs. Her daughter looks across at her.
You know, I think she could be both of those. Do you reckon she's corrupt?
I have no evidence, but she could be, says Olivia.
She and her husband could even be linked to the death of a guy in my office. That bloke who died on your first day,
says Poppy. Olivia nods.
What was his name again?
By the time Ellen arrives, Olivia is another step along the recovery path. They cook pasta and sit by the window, watching the few boats on the Thames that are present at this time of year chug past. Ellen drinks wine, but Olivia sticks to tonic with ice.
How was the weekend in Sussex?
Says Ellen.
You know about Claire?
Ellen nods.
Apart from that, what struck me was how everyone there had something to hide. Such as?
Says Ellen.
Greer Alpin tried to shut me down when I asked about Stephen. Wouldn't talk about it. But there was something else that you said.
What? When we met early on, you said that you knew Claire in her 20s, and that her parents seemed to be hiding things too. I saw that again at the weekend. They were all very nice and pleasant, but they're experts at avoiding what they don't want to talk about. They just wanted to give the idea that everything was under control. It just didn't seem real. You know Gerald was mixed up in a fraud case when he was MP,
says Ellen.
Some girl died too. Sir Bruce was part of it too, you know. Jeremy's father,
says Ellen.
It links the two families. Who was the girl? No idea. It was in the papers briefly, then nothing. They probably suppressed it. That reminds me, I wanted to show you something,
says Olivia.
I got a photo fit from the police.
She picks up her phone, scrolls through to the photos and shows Ellen the picture.
You know him?
Ellen stares at the screen.
You know, maybe I have seen him.
Where?
At Claire's parents' place,
says Ellen.
Not recently, years ago. He was younger.
Who was he?
Don't know. He was at some party she had when her folks were away. I remember he kept coming in and out, and whispering in Claire's ear a few times. And she looked annoyed each time. I said something to her about him, but she didn't tell me who he was.
On her way back home, Greer's phone chimes in her hand. She checks the name of the caller and answers.
Heather, what a lovely surprise. I thought I'd update you, Greer, on the girl in my department that you and Jeremy were finding intrusive.
Oh, yes.
I just called Jeremy, but there was no answer, so I thought I'd try you,
says Heather.
I spoke to the girl and left her in no doubt that she is on a final warning.
Thank you.
She seems to have a bit of an ego. I mentioned about professionalism, particularly when meeting senior figures.
It has been worrying me,
says Greer.
I'm standing in the bio-elect for Sussex North, and I didn't want her silly questions to cause unnecessary disquiet. I didn't know you were standing,
says Heather.
I heard Mike was retiring. Well done. Are you selected yet by the local committee?
Next month. It should go well. Sir Bruce is lobbying for me down there.
How's Jeremy? Haven't seen him for a week or two,
says Heather.
He seemed out of sorts last time. He was asking about my chap who died, Boyd, and about the police investigation.
What did you say?
Only that they are damnably slow about the whole thing. It seems cut and dry, but they're dragging their feet.
Why'd you say that?
Says Greer.
There's a witness now, I think. Saw someone. I'm not entirely clear.
A witness to what?
Someone was there at the time of death, on the tracks,
says Heather.
They need to trace him, to clear him or arrest him.
Are you in a position to bend their ear over putting the whole thing to bed?
Says Greer.
I could do with it being all sorted before voting starts. I know the superintendent there,
says Heather.
I can have a word. I won't forget your help, Heather. Talk later.
The front door to the Bluebird Bar can only be accessed down a side alleyway from Buckingham Palace Road. There's no large sign shouting the name of the place, as the clientele prefer to think that they are members of an exclusive group who uniquely know where the place is. They know Tom here. He's the lonely bloke who arrives on his own, doesn't talk to anyone, has three drinks over the course of 2 hours and reads a book on art in the corner, then leaves. Marie, who has been working behind the bar for many years, knew Kate, and only she knows why he turns up. Tonight, Tom has been here for nearly an hour. When there's a lull in the flow of patrons, Marie tells Freddie the barman that she'll take a break, pours two glasses of Sauvignon and walks over to where Tom is sitting.
Thought you could do with another, Tom,
she says. She puts one glass on the table in front of him and sits down next to him on the banquette.
Thanks,
is all he says, but Marie is used to his brevity.
You should move on,
she says after a minute.
She ain't coming back. I know. She can't tell his mood from so few words.
Why'd you keep having here, then? To find him. The guy did it.
Tom nods.
He's long gone, Tom, whoever he was. Blokes come in here sometimes for one evening, get pissed, wake up somewhere, can't remember what happened the next day. Then never return. It's all I have, Marie. Whoever did it is hardly going to come back, is he?
She says.
Hardly going to have another pissed up evening in the bar where he beat a girl to death.
Tom is unflinching as she refers to the events of the night that Kate died.
You're a good-looking bloke,
she says.
You should get another girl, fall in love. Get Kate out of your head. Even I'd shag you. There's an offer.
He turns his head and smiles at her.
That's better, a bit more cheerful. You're too young to become an old duffer. We all have shit days, we all have things happen to us that we want to forget. I've had fucking awful blokes in my life. I've got over them. Saw they were bad for me. It's not worth spending your days moping over stuff that doesn't go your way.
She raises her drink to him and they chink glasses. She takes a mouthful of wine and looks across as a group of men arrive at the bar.
I'd better go back.
She kisses him on the cheek.
I'll hold you to that shag.
She winks and points at him, then walks back to the bar. Tom continues to read his book, not noticing anything around him. After half an hour, he does look up and surveys the people in the bar. He doesn't know who he's looking for. He wasn't in the bar the night Kate died. It could be anyone. He watches the faces of the men, trying to imagine if each, in turn, could be a killer. One face looks familiar to him, and his mind scans through where he could have seen him before. Not work, not college, not near where he lives. Who is that guy? His brain flicks through his life and the people he's met. It's the eyes that he's seen before. Then he remembers the face from one of the drinks parties at the Alpens house. The man drinking and loudly laughing at some joke or other. It's a Bruce Alpen.